You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio, and at this time every week we like to catch up with Matt Stringer, the CEO of RNIB, who joins me over Microsoft Teams. Hello to you, Matt. How are you this week?
Yeah, all good. Feeling the autumn is coming. The weather's a bit chillier and darker now than it was last week, so I think we're moving out of, you know, what has been a very good summer, I think, into the autumn. So that's how it feels a bit this week, I think.
Yeah, this is the first week I've worn a jumper, jeans and socks. It's six months.
I'm still wearing shorts, which is something your listeners won't enjoy probably, but I think by next week I'll be a ditch the shorts and we'll be into long trousers for the winter. Yes,
absolutely.
So, I can empathize with that.
Yeah. We've had an interesting week, of course, with lots of new announcements, and you know, as we talk, you know, and it's no secret that we're recording this conversation, you know, things can change and who knows where we'll be tomorrow, never mind next week. But of course, lots of new announcements around coronavirus and COVID-19. New restrictions being brought in, subtly different across the four nations. But with this, of course, I think many people this week were in the position of thinking things were starting to get back to, or hoping to get back to, some kind of normality, maybe not right away, but over a period. And I think for a lot of people this week was a bit of a sharp wake-up call that things are not going to return to normal for some time. Prime Minister Boris Johnson talking about current restrictions being in place for potentially up to 6 months. How does that impact on the planning you've been having and you know, hoping to get people back into offices, you know, get people back from working from home? How does all of that factor into your planning?
No, it's a very good question and a very current question, clearly. You know, we put in place a plan, you know, which we go through a very sort of rigorous process of quarterly reforecasting, you know, which we've been very assiduous about, as you'd expect, in the first 6 months of this year, to really keep on top of the situation. And, you know, the good news on the one hand is, you know, we're in good shape as we approach the end of the first half, you know, both in terms of how we're serving our beneficiaries, you know, the sort of you know, good order of the organisation, and you know, our financial position is looking quite robust compared to, you know, some of the challenges that we saw, you know, back in March and April. So, you know, we're not in bad shape. Clearly, we have a plan for the balance of the year. That the good news is that we were never being sort of cavalier about our expectations that society would suddenly open up and we could do a whole host of sort of face-to-face activity, whether that's service delivery, fundraising, you know, getting people back together precipitously. So we were always sort of conservative with a small c. So whilst these announcements clearly suggest we're in for a bit of a long haul through the autumn, I think, on the, you know, the good news is, you know, we'd plan to be cautious, and therefore we're only getting the caution that we planned for in some respects. You know, the disappointing thing is that we were all looking forwards to the business that are generally opening up a bit, you know, both in terms of people coming back into physical offices, you know, teams coming back together to work face to face, you know, with all the benefits to creativity and innovation and efficiency and health, mental health, and people's happiness, I think, of being face to face. So, you know, it's disappointing that we're going to probably have to be a bit more restricted going forwards. And we are just assessing, like all organisations this week, you know, the government announcements on Tuesday about, you know, working from home, you know, more social distancing, you know, less social life available. And the Chancellor is talking to some of the employment and loan schemes, and we will clearly have to get our heads around the applicability of those to us in the second half of the year. So, you know, it brings another set of challenges because there's a new paradigm to manage in. I think the good news is, though, that we never expected to be in a really relaxed environment in the second half of the year, so it shouldn't give us too many problems to be able to sort of respond.
Let's talk a bit about more current eye health related news, because of course it is National Eye Health Week, and it's a great opportunity to remind the public out there, not just visually impaired people, but everybody, about the importance of eye health, looking after your eyes, getting your eyes tested every 2 years. You know, it's a great week, isn't it, to get the message across, and a great week for RNIB to showcase the amount of services that we have here to support people who are visually impaired and also try to prevent others from losing their sight.
No, absolutely. I mean, as the sort of single national charity across the UK, we have a role to play in really trying to publicise issues around eye health and get people, whatever stage you're at in terms of engaging with, any professional on your eye health to actually do that and do it quickly and properly. The broader problem, linking back to the previous sort of question on sort of COVID restrictions, has been, the health service maybe not, being able to cope with people with other illnesses. And we've all heard stories about, have we been processing as many cancer patients as we should and all those sorts of things nationwide. But, I think the message we're trying to push out through this week is that it's vitally important, even if you believe there are, some restrictions in the health service, there aren't, and they are very keen to see people who need to be seen. And so, first message from National Eye Health Week is it's absolutely vital that people continue to attend, eye clinic and optician's appointments. Those environments are set up safely, they're COVID secure, they know what they're doing. And it's more important for you to go and sort of visit, and have that appointment and get checked out. Now, please don't not do that. You've got to go get checked out because, as we know, getting seen and getting diagnosed and getting whatever treatment that might be needed, the earlier the better. It's the same with all health conditions, but that's no different with eye health. So the sooner you can go to those appointments, the better. So I mean, the first message is, do continue to attend. Second message is, do go through having your routine eye tests, whether it's your 2-yearly routine, your 2-yearly sort of check, or whether you've been, sort of indicated by an optician or a doctor or another to maybe get an eye test, please, please again, go and get your eyes tested. Hopefully you get a clean bill of health, but it is, again, the start of the process that can end up with, appropriate treatment coming sooner rather than later, which is going to be massively beneficial to people down the line. And I think just generally for all of us, eyes are part of our bodies. We've got to keep fit. We think about our broader physical fitness, but you need to look after your eyes is the third message. We've got eye health, things you can do to make sure you look after your eyes, to keep them fit and healthy and to prevent problems, degenerating. And if you go on our social media and you look on our website, you'll find a ton of tips from us on how to maintain your eye health generally.
Yeah, we've been talking about that all week on RNIB Connect Radio. rnib.org.uk/eye-health is where to go, or just go to the website and search for eye health and National Eye Health Week. It's staggering, though, isn't it, how many people don't go to their optician. Those people who will every 6 months arrange an appointment for the dentist, but still don't consider going to get their eyes tested, even their children's eyes tested. And there's really no simple answer to this. It's not that people think that they're perhaps going to cost them money because they may have to buy new glasses. There doesn't seem to be a reason why people don't do it. But yet, if you ask people what they would fear, most, or if you were to lose one of your senses, of course, it's going to be your sight. They'd be terrified at losing that. It's a strange place we're in with that, isn't it?
No, I agree, Stephen. I mean, I think, a number of things in your question. I think, there are other types of illness where we probably feel more, both a combination of maybe more alert and more aware of the potential sort of health issues, cancer, heart health, general fitness. Clearly a lot of talk about sort of eating well and trying to avoid sort of obesity. And I think, that's been a big push. And I think, the sort of cancer sector of the health service, with some very strong cancer charities actually have done a great job of getting, cancer to be very, very well sort of, people are very aware of it, are very alert to it, and actually, would know that they need to go and get it checked out. There's no stigma and there's no, sort of nervousness or opposition to doing that. I think eyes, I don't know whether it's people, used to seeing people wearing specs and having, contact lenses and, it sort of seems, I don't know, somehow a little bit more acceptable, more normal, and as I say, less of an acute problem than other sort of health conditions. But as you said, the ultimate is that if you lose your sight, it is a sense that people are the most nervous about losing. So, as I mentioned answering your previous question, you know, it really is beholden on all of us to make sure we go and, you know, have the appropriate checkups, you know, go to those eye clinic appointments and, you know, be very wary of sort of looking after our eyes generally, so that we can end up, you know, being much more preventative and nipping things in the bud as early as possible. So
go get your eyes checked. Yeah. That's the bottom line, isn't it?
Well, no, absolutely. Don't put it off.
Yeah.
I mean, people do put off going to the dentist because there's sort of that sort of remembrance of your childhood and the doctor, dentist looming over you with a drill. And yet we still manage to go every 6 months. So, you know, with eyes, it's a gentler appointment, you know, clearly than going to the dentist potentially. Mm. But, yeah, you should go because it's absolutely vital that you sort of, you know, we get ahead of the problem and don't end up storing up problems by delaying visits.
Now, there's a lot of things I want to talk to you about here. Wearables is another area that I wanted to talk about with you this week. How are you helping with blind and partially sighted people social distancing and enabling us to get support where we need it?
Well, one of the big sort of things we've been campaigning on as the lockdown has released in all the four devolved nations, working with various government, you know, departments and devolved nations governments, has been, you know, sort of being able to support blind and partially sighted people through that. So we've, you know, we were integral in getting the guidance published on how to guide safely, you know, to try and sort of conform to social distancing. You know, we've been working with a variety of bodies outside government, so you know, in industry, retailers and people in hospitality trade, gyms, you know, etc., leisure, to put in place, you know, appropriate training for staff and sort of operational guidelines to, you know, allow social distancing to be maintained and for blind and partially sighted people to be able to access information in those environments to maintain social distancing. So we've done a lot, and the latest development, as you mentioned, is wearables, which is basically the principle about sort of please give me space, you know, and there are a range of wearable items that people can wear that basically tell people who can see that person that they need space and they should give them a sort of, you know, the 2 meter space and distance that, you know, we're all sort of looking to seek at the moment. And there's a variety of products, lanyards, cards, face masks, snuds. I saw a badge today tweeted by somebody actually, which is an emblem of a sort of yellow circle with a person in the center and then arrows pointing out at either side to indicate, you know, giving that person a sort of 2 meter space. So yeah, we're delighted this has been implemented. We've been sort of prime movers amongst a number of organizations working on this, and, you know, I'm very pleased it's out there and that blind and partially sighted people can take advantage of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's available from RNIB's shop. People can buy this, is that right?
Well, that's right. If you look online, you'll find information about it on our website, and I'll just give a plug to another website. So if you go to pleasegivemespace.co.uk, again, you can find products there and information about it. So we have information, but there's another website, pleasegivemespace.co.uk, because the please give me space in quotes is a sort of strap line of this initiative. So that's the website name.
And finally, Matt, one more thing I want to ask you about, and we can't really let this particular call go by without mentioning Marathon Mates and all of the wonderful people who have been running virtually, doing wonderful things to try and raise money for RNIB and being very successful at it as well. I don't know about you, but I think this has been a fantastic campaign this year and one that's really engaged a lot of people.
Yeah, no, Marathon Mates, I mean, you know, we built out the double dash, which was the original idea to run with a colleague with a sort of tether between you. And clearly that's not really doable in COVID with all the lockdown challenges we've got. So we came up with a sort of Marathon Mates idea to run, you know, with a mate, but sort of virtually. So you both combine your distance to cover, you know, 26 miles, you know, which is the marathon distance in a year where there's no London Marathon and other, you know, big marathons that normally take place, which we would use to sort of fundraise and campaign around. So, no, it's been a great event. I come on and religiously talk about it every week with Alan to bang the drum for people to participate. And I think your listeners will be delighted that this is the last interview in September. So I'm running out of time to talk about it. But, you know, it's been great. A lot of energy, a lot of people internally really got behind it and externally actually, and shown a ton of commitment and ingenuity in fundraising. You know, we've got some massive amounts raised by individuals who really clearly sort of got a lot of focus from their friends and family locally, with about a week to go, we're in a good spot for it to be make a good contribution financially, but also do, you know, what I hoped it would do, which was to give quite a lot of people a sort of lift through September and give them a bit of a sort of springboard into the autumn. And we've had a lot of fun with it internally, you know, on our internal social media and sort of intranet sites, with people posting videos and stories. So, you know, on a number of fronts, it's been a really, really good event. And I'm sure when we, you know, review it after the end of September, you know, we'll realise that we're onto a bit of a winner here. And we'll look to sort of take it forward, you know, with our double dash idea, the original double dash idea, into next year, and do something a bit similar in the spring, lockdown permitting. So, one final plug from me for people to, you know, engage with maybe friends and family running, look online, look on the website, see if you can make a contribution. It's all in a great cause.
Absolutely. Matt Stringer, as always, great to catch up with you. Look forward to meeting you again next week on RNIB Connect Radio.
No, thank you very much, Stephen. My pleasure.